Welcome to Talk World Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson. This week on Talk World Radio, we are talking about Palestine with Kathy Kelly, who is board president of World Beyond War. From 2022 to 24, she co-coordinated the Merchants of Death War Crimes Tribunal. Since the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan, she has co-coordinated an international network to assist young Afghans forced to flee their country. Hopefully we can talk a little bit about that. She made 24 trips to Afghanistan with Voices in the Wilderness Companions from 96 to 2003. She went 27 times to Iraq. She joined delegations to the West Bank's Jenin camp in 2002 during and after Israeli attacks, to Lebanon during 2006 when there was a war between Israel and Hezbollah, and to Gaza in 2009 during Operation Cast Lead, and following the 2013 Operation Pillar of Defense. Kathy has been an educator for most of her life. She believes children of war and those who are victims of violence have been her most important teachers. Kathy Kelly, welcome back to Talk World Radio.
Oh, hello, David. Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. Thanks for everything you keep doing. Thanks for the recent article we published at World Beyond War called "We Were So Close, Life After Conscience and the Abraham Accords." I hope we can talk about some of the topics in that wonderful article, including conscience. This is not conscience in the ordinary sense of the word, right?
Well, a picture of the flotilla ship that was just recently attacked by two drones, weaponized drones, shows on the side of the ship the word conscience. And I thought that was a very apt title for this ship, because when we're seeing children burned alive in tents where they've been forcibly displaced, when we see the skeletal images of children starving, and when we know that every day playing out on our screens is a genocide, people are troubled. Their consciences are troubled. But it's been, I think, important to see civil society rising from the bottom up, in stark contrast to the leadership, like, for instance, autocratic leadership of Arab countries that are not doing what they could do to block this terrible slaughter of children in Palestine, Palestinian children in Gaza and the West Bank. So the flotilla was and has been a very strong, determined, courageous symbol of people who say, okay, I might lose my life in this one. My friend Cassandra joined the flotilla effort, and she'd been in Masafer Yatta in the South Hebron Hills. And she was with people that were being violently attacked by settlers. And she was there for 6 weeks, went back to Wisconsin. And she said, as she was leaving her home to go and join the group in Malta waiting to board the flotilla, you know, she's closing the door and she realized she was looking over her house with the thought, I might not come back here. And if people come and I'm gone, what will they find? Well, you know, that's not the sort of thing we usually feel when we're walking out the door and locking our house. So the people that join these flotillas understand that they're facing great risk, because in the past, the Mavi Marmara flotilla was boarded by hundreds of people, many of them from Turkey, and 10 people were killed when Israeli forces boarded that ship. So it's a good symbol of what we ought to be thinking about. How can we act in accord with our conscience?
And this friend of yours was in this region where the Oscar-winning film No Other Land was made, where houses are routinely demolished and people are harassed and attacked and abused and injured and killed, right? This is why a flotilla is needed, right?
Well, yeah, the West Bank in places is beginning to look just like Gaza. Mosques are destroyed, roads are destroyed, water filtration plants. And then, you know, settlers with maybe less state-of-the-art equipment, they know how to poison wells or to attack flocks so that the people's livelihoods begin to disappear. They torch cars. And so, like, for instance, if a settler shoots one of the villagers in the leg and the car has been torched, how do you get the villager to the hospital? And you want to go to the Palestinian hospital where they speak his language. But they couldn't, so they called the Israeli military. And the soldiers were chatting up the settlers and watching this guy lying on the ground bleeding. And, he's in desperate need to get his leg treated. And they shackled him to a gurney, took him to a hospital, shackled him to the hospital bed. It's an Israeli hospital. He didn't know whether his leg might have been saved, but they amputated. I mean, meanwhile, they arrested 22 of the young men in the village. So, at some point, Israel is going to be so surrounded by people with grievances, huge grievances, and the nonviolent purposefulness of the flotilla might be looked upon as, kind of a much better option. And so, why did they bomb it?
Yeah, the flotilla is what the entire world ought to and is legally obliged to be doing, right? To attempt to bring aid to these people.
Well, I'm glad you used the word legal. And I mean, okay, I'm an anarchist and I recognize that I've broken the law lots of times and gone to prison for it. So I have always believed, though, that I and my companions were upholding a higher law. Well, we do need international law in this very complicated world that's hurtling toward ecological catastrophe. It would be stupid to say to the children and forthcoming generations, oh, well, we trashed international law because we just wanted to meet short-term goals and have more stuff. And really, when you look at it, what is it that these autocracies want who are so flagrantly violating international law? Well, one thing that, for instance, Saudi Arabia wants is the nuclear bomb. And they've been quite clear, if Iran gets the bomb, we'll get the bomb. And if President Trump comes to Saudi Arabia, what we really want to talk to him about is getting sophisticated nuclear technology. And then everybody pretties it up and said, oh, it's just for nuclear energy, but it's a hop, skip, and a jump to go from nuclear energy to nuclear war capacity. So here we have India and Pakistan, both of them nuclear armed countries. People thought, oh, they're just talking, talking tough with each other, but they're in a war. And these wars tend to cycle upward. And one of the reasons is because countries have parked on their tarmacs attack helicopters and F-16s and state-of-the-art weapons that they get from companies like Boeing and Raytheon and Lockheed Martin and all the merchants of death that we wanted to, bring to accountability. Those are the ones who profit from all of this, but these autocrats have itchy fingers. They want to try out the stuff that they have. And then you see, when you go to the Swedish Institute for Peace and Research Studies, you see, oh, well, it's tapering off. It doesn't go that way. It cycles. They get all this new stuff, and then, maybe they get some training on how to use it, and then they want more. And then that's not all. They want military policing to train their police to subjugate any domestic opposition. So they want surveillance capacity. They want to know, well, how do you demolish these houses? Can we get some of those bulldozers? How do you do night raids? What kind of security, quote, security do we need so we can go barging into people's homes and we won't get killed in the process? This is what is being sought. And then they call it the Abraham Accords. Now, that one makes me crazy, David, because Abraham was the one who didn't kill his son Isaac. He was, the one that in the storied lore of the Old Testament finally caught on. The great God doesn't want to smell the flesh of your burning child after you've plunged a dagger into the child's heart. Don't do that. Don't practice child sacrifice. So if they were really fulfilling Abraham Accords, they'd be starting World Beyond War chapters.
I'm not the fan of Abraham or God in that story that you are. One of them says, kill your kid, and the other one says, yes, sir. And then the first one says, no, don't really. And oh, he says, oh, okay, I won't. Like that kind of obedience, I think, is what dooms us compared to your willingness, as you mentioned, to violate unjust laws as needed.
But David, read it as cartoons. People are bored out of their mind. They're sitting around campfires. They need to entertain the kids so the kids don't drive them crazy. And they tell stories, and then they start telling funny stories. Like, isn't it funny that Abraham was going to kill Isaac, and then all of a sudden God says, don't do it, and Isaac runs away free. And I think that those stories were formative for ancient communities. But we don't have to take them so literally. We can sort of see a glint of fun in some of it, and enjoy the idea of Isaac running down the hill saying, "Hey, look, that dad didn't kill me." But
You
you're right
know,
about obedience to a vengeful God, and that I think we have to let go of, and never ever teach to children that they have to obey a vengeful, retaliatory, cruel God.
well, I agree with that. And even worse, maybe calling these Abraham Accords peace agreements, because it's not a peace agreement. It's something very, very different, right?
Well, it's a deal. And it's a deal for huge amounts of money to get transferred. And they'll talk about, oh, well, we're going to have ecotourism, sorry, tourism, increased tourism, and we'll have shared technology. But when you look at what actually happens, okay, so the United Arab Emirates signed the Abraham Accords, and then they were eligible to get. They normalized relations with Israel, so now they can get more state-of-the-art weaponry. And then, who is the United Arab Emirates using those weapons against? Yemeni civilians, setting up torture camps inside of Yemen. Then we find that the United Arab Emirates are arming the people in Sudan, and World Beyond War chapters in Africa are begging us, can't you get your people to stop arming the United Arab Emirates? Don't you see what's happening? And we do see what's happening. And so, Saudi Arabia, when you look at the history of disease and starvation that they caused in Yemen, and both the Saudis and the US now have bombed a camp where Africans from Ethiopia or Somalia were trying to flee because they're starving and they're thirsty and they're desperate. And they go into these extremely dangerous situations, crossing from the Horn of Africa into Yemen, risking their lives because smugglers are not kind people. And then they finally are, getting close to a border where they might get into Saudi Arabia, might get jobs, and they're in a migrant detention center, and the US bombed it, and 2 years earlier the Saudis bombed it. And you have to wonder, are the Saudis sharing surveillance information with the Americans? Is there something under that camp that they think they're attacking? But even if there is, you don't kill civilians.
I'm always struck, Kathy, when the U.S. government pretends it opposes brutal, lawless dictatorships and finds one or two on the planet that it opposes because it so heavily supports all the rest of them. And it seems like Saudi Arabia is, exhibit number one. If you're going to pretend to support democracy, and you're going to denounce Iran for having a bad government and so forth, and you're going to claim you're not trying to spread weapons of mass destruction around the world, it seems like the very last thing you would ever do would be to try to give Saudi Arabia nuclear weapons. And yet, that's on the US government agenda.
Yeah, they're definitely giving them a green light because so far the Saudis have not cooperated at all with the International Atomic Energy Association. And that group wants to go in and see, okay, what do they have so far? And then they can start establishing benchmarks. But the Saudis just brush them off. So they're already flaunting international law. And if they were to get the nuclear technology, then you've got buried in the Negev Desert, at the Shimon Peres Nuclear Weapon Research Institute, many nuclear weapons. It's hard to know how many because the Israelis also refuse even to acknowledge that they have them, although the CIA knows it and everybody's been quite well aware, at least 90 and quite possibly hundreds of thermonuclear weapons in Israel. So if we have the Saudis and the Israelis and India and Pakistan getting ready to say we could use these and threatening one another with these kinds of weapons, it's pushing the world closer and closer toward a nuclear disaster. And it's reckless to keep it up. And there have been plenty of experts who are saying that and who are quite worried. But so what do ordinary people in civil society do? I'm looking at the Veterans for Peace and thinking, oh, good on them. They're thinking about starting an open-ended fast in New York City across from the US mission to the United Nations. Because one of the main blocks to international law being implemented is the United States and this crazy setup of the Security Council allowing one or the other of the big five to impose a veto and totally stymie any opportunities to actually implement the laws that have already been passed. I mean, according to international law, no country should ever be shipping anything to Israel. And right now, okay, so Jordan says, oh, yeah, we denounce what Israel is doing. But then, well, if you want to get a trucking route that's going to get in kind of through the back door to get goods to Israeli settlements, industries, and to the military, you can. There is a road, and the Jordanians are letting things go through. And Turkey as well, they speak as though they're the ones who are the biggest defenders of Palestinians, but it's really the truth is just about every Arab country has thrown the Palestinians under the bus, the proverbial throw Palestinians under the bus, because they want the goods and the technology and the weaponry and the training on how to use the weaponry. Not the people on the street, but the autocrats running these countries rather recklessly and ruthlessly, as has gone on for a long time. And it's happening increasingly here in this country.
So what about this conference on a two-state solution, Kathy? And what the heck is left to be a second state?
Well, France and Saudi Arabia are hosting this conference at the UN June 2nd and 3rd. France hasn't even recognized Palestine as a state. So it's curious that France is co-hosting with Saudi Arabia a conference. And Saudi Arabia has proven itself to be an extremely predatory state. They've all got their eyes on the coastline of Gaza and on the possibilities of liquid natural gas or other kinds of energy schemes that they would like to implement in real estate deals. So it looks as though the Saudis have been hoping that if they were eventually to say, okay, we'll normalize relations with Israel, that they would get in return the state-of-the-art weapons they want and a pact, a security pact, so-called, with the United States, so that if they invade another country and then that country goes to war with them, the United States has to side with the Saudis. So they want all that. That's the package they want. Well, they're not quite ready to say, and we'll verify a two-state solution, but they're getting close, and that's what we have to really try to be up in front of, because the two-state solution being discussed is actually a collection of Bantustans, really. That's how South Africa used to regard the places that weren't dominated by apartheid. And so there wouldn't be contiguous land between villages and towns and cities. They would be separated and surrounded by Israeli security or allies of Israel that are imposing security, they wouldn't have access to the finest, rich, fertile land. They wouldn't have access to coastlines. It's a terrible solution. And it they're who is looking for enforcement or expectation that the Palestinians have a right to self-determination, a right to security, and a right to survive? That's not even on the table.
In fact, there's a proposal on the table this past week or so that's even worse, I would suggest, which is that the United States take over the occupation of Gaza, having done such a brilliant job in Afghanistan and Iraq. The United States should, which of course is going to lead to a handful of deaths that matter, right? Deaths that people care about after all of these thousands of people slaughtered. What sense can you make of this notion?
Well, I guess we have to see the revolving door again. We've talked so often about people revolving from military positions into the Congress and the Senate and, higher appointments. The people in the military who come back to the United States and wonder, okay, now what am I going to do? Very often find what are called security contracting jobs. Now, again, security in quotation marks, because what does it secure? It secures their ability to get a paycheck. It secures the reenactment of what people learned how to do in the military. And these security companies use increasing surveillance and higher tech equipment, and they become the military arm of whatever group hires them. And yes, their lives are at risk. Some of us remember Fallujah as a nightmare that went on and on after security contractors were killed and burned in effigy, and the Fallujans, they were just wild with despair and rage. Well, then Fallujah was just devastated and clobbered, and it was a city full of beautiful mosques. And every one of those was reduced to rubble. So the people in the Arab world have seen this. They know what they're in for if they stand up and resist. And so it's impressive to me. In Jordan, people are out on the streets risking imprisonment and beatings and family destruction. People in Yemen have certainly been out on the streets regularly. And it's not correct to say that everybody living in Yemen is Houthi any more than everybody living in Palestine is Hamas. But it's
Right.
also not correct to think that you can just dismiss and bomb and overcome these movements that have had a chance to become very, very entrenched generationally and are the ones providing social security in as much as it's available in many, many areas. So I think the United States leadership is so undereducated. People don't speak multiple languages. We find that Trump's cabinet is, almost laughable. But these are very dangerous situations. And the other thing that troubles me so much, David, is how cavalierly we walk away from the wars that the United States has caused in Iraq, in Afghanistan. And when I see people in Afghanistan starving, subjected to the worst situations, some are killing themselves rather than suffer deportation back to Afghanistan. And all around Europe, countries are shuttering their doors and saying no more migration. And the United States is at the head of the pack when it comes to saying, no, we don't want migrants here. And yet, you'll hear people saying, oh, people aren't having enough children. So we could welcome
Wrong,
everybody.
wrong
We could
kind of
share
children.
resources. Yeah,
It's the
right.
kind of children, yeah. And 50 years now after having done this to Vietnam. Kathy, we've got just 3 or 4 minutes left, and I wanted to ask you about your fellow Chicagoan, the new Pope, and whether he's gonna try to be helpful in any of these disasters we've been discussing.
I hope that he'll take to heart how meaningful it was for Pope Francis to call the parish in Gaza, the Church of the Holy Family, almost every night. Toward the end of his life, he maybe missed some nights, but even from his hospital bed, he was calling them, and he derived great joy. There's a lot that's a pain in the neck about the job that Pope Leo now has, but he could find great joy if he would connect with that church. And I hope he does that. And I hope that he will also follow what Pope Francis began with regard to tolerance and welcoming. The idea that women should be second-class citizens, relegated to the fringes of what should be a gathering of the people that women have served so well for so long, why not be truthful about that? So he's got big challenges, but to me, I think the most important first step he could take is, at least from afar, bless the Popemobile that Francis used to crisscross Palestine his last time there. Be glad that that's going to be turned into a health clinic at the behest of Francis's will. And then follow in Francis's footsteps with his iPhone and his whatever smartphone he's using, and call that parish and learn every night. And Pope Francis, when he'd hear that there was bombing going on right near that particular, he would call them 5 times a day. So that's the footstep that we should
When
follow.
that Popemobile, aid mobile is blown up by the Israeli military, as the Israeli military recently attacked a ship basically in Europe, and Europe said, "Oh, that's wonderful, no problem at all. We could object, object to
Yeah.
that, right?"
Well, little Hind Rajab would be 7 years old. Three recently, it would have been her birthday, and she's the little 5-year-old girl who was killed by Israeli Defense Forces and the ambulance that might have saved her life after all of her family members that were traveling with her had been killed was just 850 feet away from her. And then we learned that ambulance drivers who had gone in to try to help vehicles that had gone off the road and had been attacked, they themselves were attacked and buried in a shallow grave. I mean, these are war crimes, and they tumble in like a, Bertolt Brecht once said, when evil doing comes like falling rain. And that's the way it is. So around the Arab world, around Europe, around the United States, we need people of conscience. To say enough, we can't go along with this any longer because it will come home to roost.
We've been speaking with Kathy Kelly, who is a board president at World Beyond War, where I'm the executive director. I encourage you to read Kathy Kelly's writings at worldbeyondwar.org and elsewhere, and to join in the work we're doing. Kathy is putting together a webinar soon with Voices from Palestine, and there are many other activities you can find at worldbeyondwar.org. Kathy Kelly, thank you so much for everything you're doing, and again for coming on Talk World Radio.
Thank you, David. It's great to be with Talk World and to imagine what this world could be. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
This is Talk World Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. Read or listen to today's Peace Almanac entry at peacealmanac.org. All past shows can be heard at talkworldradio.org. Talk World Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way.